Hello there, and welcome to this reading of Twilight to help you sleep. This is Down to Sleep, my weekly podcast of softly spoken stories. Available everywhere you get podcasts, so wherever you're listening, please drop a follow and a positive review to help this podcast grow. If you don't want to wait to hear the rest of this book, it is available from start to finish right now on my Patreon, which is the main version of this podcast. Their episodes go out twice a week, so we get quite far ahead with the books, including exclusive readings like Howl's Moving Castle. There are more than 250 episodes right now at patreon.com/downtosleep. You can also find my YouTube and Instagram in the description box for this podcast. For now, let's tuck you in. Take a nice deep breath for me, and let's get down to sleep. Twilight by Stephanie Meyer. Hi. I couldn't think of anything else to say, and he didn't speak, biding his time, I presumed. So it was a quiet walk to the cafeteria. Walking with Edward through the crowded lunchtime rush was a lot like my first day here. Everyone stared. He led the way into the line, still not speaking, though his eyes returned to my face every few seconds, their expression speculative. It seemed to me that irritation was winning out over amusement as the dominant emotion in his face. I fidgeted nervously with the zipper on my jacket. He stepped up to the counter and filled a tray with food. "What are you doing?" I objected. "You're not getting all that for me." He shook his head, stepping forward to buy the food. "Half is for me, of course." I raised one eyebrow. He led the way to the same place we'd sat that one time before. From the other end of the long table, a group of seniors gazed at us in amazement as we sat across from each other. Edward seemed oblivious. "Take whatever you want," he said, pushing the tray towards me. "I'm curious," I said as I picked up an apple, turning it around in my hands. "What would you do if someone dared you to eat food?" "You're always curious," he grimaced, shaking his head. He glared at me, holding my eyes as he lifted the slice of pizza off the tray and deliberately bit off a mouthful, chewed quickly, and swallowed. I watched, eyes wide. "If someone dared you to eat dirt, you could, couldn't you?" he asked condescendingly. I wrinkled my nose. "I did once, on a dare," I admitted. "It wasn't so bad." He laughed. "I suppose I'm not surprised." Something over my shoulder seemed to catch his attention. "Jessica's analyzing everything I do. She'll break it down for you later." He pushed the rest of the pizza toward me. The mention of Jessica brought a hint of his former irritation back to his features. I put down the apple and took a bite out of the pizza, looking away, knowing he was about to start. "So, the waitress was pretty, was she?" he asked casually. "You really didn't notice?" "No, I wasn't paying attention. I had a lot on my mind." "Poor girl. I could afford to be generous now." "Something you said to Jessica. Well, it bothers me." He refused to be distracted. His voice was husky, and he glanced up from under his lashes with troubled eyes. "I'm not surprised you heard something you didn't like. You know what they say about eavesdroppers," I reminded him. "I warned you I would be listening. And I warned you that you didn't want to know everything I was thinking." "You did," he agreed, but his voice was still rough. "You aren't precisely right, though. I do want to know what you're thinking. Everything. I just wish that you wouldn't be thinking some things." I scowled. "That's quite a distinction. But that's not really the point at the moment." "Then what is?" We were inclined toward each other across the table now. He had his large white hands folded under his chin. I leaned forward, my right hand cupped around my neck. I had to remind myself that we were in a crowded lunchroom, with probably many curious eyes on us. It was too easy to get wrapped up in our own private, tense little bubble. "Do you truly believe that you care more for me than I do for you?" he murmured, leaning closer to me as he spoke, his dark golden eyes piercing. I tried to remember how to exhale. I had to look away before it came back to me. "You're doing it again," I muttered. His eyes opened wide with surprise. "What?" "Dazzling me," I admitted, trying to concentrate as I looked back at him. "Oh," he frowned. "It's not your fault," I sighed. "You can't help it." "Are you going to answer the question?" I looked down. "Yes." "Yes, you are going to answer, or yes, you really think that?" He was irritated again. "Yes, I really think that." I kept my eyes down on the table, my eyes tracing the pattern of the faux wood grains printed on the laminate. The silence dragged on. I stubbornly refused to be the first to break it this time, fighting hard against the temptation to peek at his expression. Finally, he spoke, voice velvet soft. "You're wrong." I glanced up to see that his eyes were gentle. "You can't know that," I disagreed in a whisper. I shook my head in doubt, though my heart throbbed at his words and I wanted so badly to believe them. "What makes you think so?" His liquid topaz eyes were penetrating, trying futilely, I assumed, to lift the truth straight from my mind. I stared back, struggling to think clearly in spite of his face, to find some way to explain. As I searched for the words, I could see him getting impatient, frustrated by my silence. He started to scowl. I lifted my hand from my neck and held up one finger. "Let me think," I insisted. His expression cleared, now that he was satisfied that I was planning to answer. I dropped my hand to the table, moving my left hand so my palms were pressed together. I stared at my hands, twisting and untwisting my fingers, as I finally spoke. "Well, aside from the obvious, sometimes," I hesitated. "I can't be sure. I don't know how to read minds, but sometimes it seems like you're trying to say goodbye when you're saying something else." That was the best I could sum up the sensation of anguish that his words triggered in me sometimes. "Perceptive," he whispered. And there was the anguish again, surfacing as he confirmed my fear. "That's exactly why you're wrong, though," he began to explain, but then his eyes narrowed. "What do you mean, the obvious?" "Well, look at me," I said, unnecessarily, as he was already staring. "I'm absolutely ordinary, except for bad things like all the near-death experiences and being so clumsy that I'm almost disabled. And look at you." I waved my hand toward him and all his bewildering perfection. His brow creased angrily for a moment, then smoothed as his eyes took on a knowing look. "You don't see yourself very clearly, you know. I'll admit, you're dead on about the bad things." He chuckled blackly. "But you didn't hear what every human male in this school was thinking on your first day." I blinked, astonished. "I don't believe it," I mumbled to myself. "Trust me, just this once. You are the opposite of ordinary." My embarrassment was much stronger than my pleasure at the look that came into his eyes when he said this. I quickly reminded him of my original argument. "But I'm not saying goodbye," I pointed out. "Don't you see? That's what proves me right. I care the most, because if I can do it..." He shook his head, seeming to struggle with the thought. "If leaving is the right thing to do, then I'll hurt myself to keep from hurting you, to keep you safe." I glared. "And you don't think I would do the same?" "You'd never have to make the choice." Abruptly, his unpredictable mood shifted again. A mischievous, devastating smile rearranged his features. "Of course, keeping you safe is beginning to feel like a full-time occupation that requires my constant presence." "No one's tried to do away with me today," I reminded him, grateful for the lighter subject. I didn't want him to talk about goodbyes anymore. If I had to, I supposed I could purposefully put myself in danger to keep him close. I banished that thought before his quick eyes read it on my face. That idea would definitely get me in trouble. "Yet," he added. "Yet," I agreed. I would have argued, but now I wanted him to be expecting disasters. "I have another question for you." His voice was still casual. "Shoot. Do you really need to go to Seattle this Saturday? Or was that just an excuse to get out of saying no to all your admirers?" I made a face at the memory. "You know, I haven't forgiven you for the Tyler thing yet," I warned him. "It's your fault he's deluded himself into thinking I'm going to prom with him." "Oh, he would have found a chance to ask you without me. I just really wanted to watch your face," he chuckled. I would have been angrier if his laughter wasn't so fascinating. "If I had asked you, would you have turned me down?" he asked, still laughing to himself. "Probably not," I admitted. "But I would have cancelled later. Faked an illness or sprained ankle." He was puzzled. "Why would you do that?" I shook my head sadly. "You've never seen me in gym, I guess. But I would have thought you would understand." "Are you referring to the fact you can't walk across a flat, stable surface without finding something to trip over?" "Obviously. That wouldn't be a problem." He was very confident. "It's all in the leading." He could see I was about to protest, and he cut me off. "But you never told me. Are you resolved on going to Seattle? Or do you mind if we do something different?" As long as the we part was in, I didn't care about anything else. "I'm open to alternatives," I allowed. "But I do have a favor to ask." He looked wary, as he always did when I asked an open-ended question. "What?" "Can I drive?" He frowned. "Why?" "Well, mostly because when I told Charlie I was going to Seattle, he specifically asked if I was going alone. And at the time, I was. If he asked again, I probably wouldn't lie. But I don't think he will ask me again. And leaving my truck at home would just bring up the subject unnecessarily. And also because your driving frightens me." He rolled his eyes. "Of all the things about me that could frighten you, you worry about my driving." He shook his head in disgust, but then his eyes were serious again. "Won't you want to tell your father that you're spending the day with me?" There was an undercurrent to his question that I didn't understand. "With Charlie, less is more." I was definite about that. "Where are we going anyway?" "The weather will be nice, so I'll be staying out of the public eye. And you can stay with me, if you'd like to." Again, he was leaving the choice up to me. "And you'll show me what you meant? About the sun? I asked, excited by the idea of unraveling another of the unknowns. Yes, he smiled, and then paused. But if you don't want to be alone with me, I'd still rather you didn't go to Seattle by yourself. I shudder to think of the trouble you could find in a city that size. I was miffed. Phoenix is 3 times bigger than Seattle, just in population, in physical size. But apparently, he interrupted me. Your number wasn't up in Phoenix, so I'd rather you stayed near me. His eyes did that unfair, smoldering thing again. I couldn't argue with the eyes or the motivation, and it was a moot point anyway. As it happens, I don't mind being alone with you. I know, he sighed, brooding. You should tell Charlie, though. Why in the world would I do that? His eyes were suddenly fierce. To give me some small incentive to bring you back. I gulped, but after a moment of thought, I was sure. I think I'll take my chances. He exhaled angrily and looked away. Let's talk about something else, I suggested. What do you want to talk about? He asked. He was still annoyed. I glanced around us, making sure we were well out of anyone's hearing. As I cast my eyes around the room, I caught the eyes of his sister, Alice, staring at me. The others were looking at Edward. I looked away swiftly back to him, and I asked the first thing that came to my mind. Why did you go to that Goat Rocks place last weekend to hunt? Charlie said it wasn't a good place to hike because of bears. He stared at me as if I was missing something very obvious. Bears, I gasped, and he smirked. You know, bears are not in season, I added sternly to hide my shock. If you read carefully, the laws only cover hunting with weapons, he informed me. He watched my face with enjoyment as that slowly sank in. Bears, I repeated with difficulty. Grizzly is Emmett's favorite. His voice was still offhand, but his eyes were scrutinizing my reaction. I tried to pull myself together. I said, taking another bite of pizza as an excuse to look down. I chewed, slowly, then took a long drink of Coke without looking up. So, I said after a moment, finally meeting his now anxious gaze. What's your favorite? He raised an eyebrow, and the corners of his mouth turned down in disapproval. Mountain lion. Ah. I said in a politely disinterested tone, looking for my soda again. Of course, he said, and his tone mirrored mine. We have to be careful not to impact the environment with injudicious hunting. We try to focus on areas with an overpopulation of predators, ranging as far away as we need. There's always plenty of deer and elk here, and they'll do. But where's the fun in that? He smiled teasingly. Where indeed? I murmured around another bite of pizza. Early spring is Emmett's favorite bear season. They're just coming out of hibernation. They're more irritable. He smiled at some remembered joke. Nothing more fun than an irritated grizzly bear, I agreed, nodding. He snickered, shaking his head. Tell me what you're really thinking. Please. I'm trying to picture it, but I can't, I admitted. How do you hunt a bear without weapons? Oh, we have weapons. He flashed his bright teeth in a brief, threatening smile. I fought back a shiver before it could expose me. Just not the kind they consider when writing hunting laws. If you've ever seen a bear attack on television, you should be able to visualize Emmett hunting. I couldn't stop the next shiver that flashed down my spine. I peeked across the cafeteria toward Emmett, grateful that he wasn't looking my way. The thick bands of muscle that wrapped his arms and torso were somehow even more menacing now. Edward followed my gaze and chuckled. I stared at him, unnerved. "Are you like a bear too?" I asked in a low voice. "More like the lion, or so they tell me," he said lightly. "Perhaps our preferences are indicative." I tried to smile. "Perhaps," I repeated, but my mind was filled with opposing images that I couldn't merge together. "Is that something I might get to see?" "Absolutely not." His face turned even whiter than usual, and his eyes were suddenly furious. I leaned back, stunned, and though I'd never admit it to him, frightened by his reaction. He leaned back as well, folding his arms across his chest. "Too scary for me?" I asked when I could control my voice again. "If that were it, I would take you out tonight," he said, his voice cutting. "You need a healthy dose of fear. Nothing could be more beneficial for you." "Then why?" I pressed, trying to ignore his angry expression. He glared at me for a long minute. "Later," he finally said. He was on his feet in one lithe movement. "We're going to be late." I glanced around, startled to see that he was right, and the cafeteria was nearly vacant. When I was with him, the time and the place were such a muddled blur. I completely lost track of both. I jumped up, grabbing my bag from the back of my chair. "Later then," I agreed. "I wouldn't forget." Everyone watched us as we walked together to our lab table. I noticed that he no longer angled the chair to sit as far from me as the desk would allow. Instead, he sat quite close beside me, our arms almost touching. Mr. Banner backed into the room then. What superb timing that man had, pulling a tall metal frame on wheels that held a heavy-looking, outdated TV and VCR. A movie day. The lift in the class atmosphere was almost tangible. Mr. Banner shoved the tape into the reluctant VCR and walked to the wall to turn off the lights. And then, as the room went black, I was suddenly hyper-aware that Edward was sitting less than an inch from me. I was stunned by the unexpected electricity that flowed through me, amazed that it was possible to be more aware of him than I already was. A crazy impulse to reach over and touch him, to stroke his perfect face just once in the darkness. It nearly overwhelmed me. I crossed my arms tightly across my chest, my hands balling into fists. I was losing my mind. The opening credits began, lighting the room by a token amount. My eyes, of their own accord, flickered to him. I smiled sheepishly as I realized his posture was identical to mine, fists clenched under his arms, right down to the eyes, peering sideways at me. He grinned back, his eyes somehow managing to smolder even in the dark. I looked away before I could start hyperventilating. It was absolutely ridiculous that I should feel dizzy. The hour seemed very long. I couldn't concentrate on the movie. I didn't even know what subject it was on. I tried, unsuccessfully, to relax. But the electric current that seemed to be originating from somewhere in his body never slackened. Occasionally, I would permit myself a quick glance in his direction, but he never seemed to relax either. The overpowering craving to touch him also refused to fade. I crushed my fists safely against my ribs until my fingers were aching with the effort. I breathed a sigh of relief when Mr. Banner flicked the lights back on at the end of class and stretched my arms out in front of me, flexing my stiff fingers. Edward chuckled beside me. "Well, that was interesting," he murmured. His voice was dark and his eyes were cautious. Was all I was able to respond. "Shall we?" he asked, rising fluidly. I almost groaned. Time for gym. I stood with care, worried my balance might have been affected by the strange new intensity between us. He walked me to my next class in silence and paused at the door. I turned to say goodbye. His face startled me. His expression was torn, almost pained, and so fiercely beautiful that the ache to touch him flared as strong as before. My goodbye stuck in my throat. He raised his hand, hesitant, conflict raging in his eyes, and then swiftly brushed the length of my cheekbone with his fingertips. His skin was as icy as ever, but the trail his fingers left on my skin was alarmingly warm, like I'd been burned, but didn't feel the pain yet. He turned without a word and strode quickly away from me. I walked into the gym, lightheaded and wobbly. I drifted to the locker room, changing in a trance-like state, only vaguely aware that there were other people surrounding me. Reality didn't fully set in until I was handed a racket. It wasn't heavy, yet it felt very unsafe in my hand. I could see a few of the other kids in class eyeing me furtively. Coach Clapp ordered us to pair up into teams. Mercifully, some vestiges of Mike's chivalry still survived. He came to stand beside me. "Do you want to be a team?" "Thanks, Mike. You don't have to do this, you know." I grimaced apologetically. "Don't worry, I'll keep out of your way," he grinned. Sometimes it was so easy to like Mike. It didn't go smoothly. I somehow managed to hit myself in the head with my racket and clip Mike's shoulder on the same swing. I spent the rest of the hour in the back corner of the court, the racket held safely behind my back. Despite being handicapped by me, Mike was pretty good. He won 3 games out of 4 single-handedly. He gave me an unearned high five when the coach finally blew the whistle, ending class. "So," he said as we walked off the court.
"So what?"
"You and Cullen, huh?" he asked, his tone rebellious. My previous feeling of affection disappeared.
"It's none of your business, Mike," I warned, internally cursing Jessica straight to the fiery pits of Hades.
"I don't like it," he muttered anyway.
"You don't have to," I snapped.
"He looks at you like you're something to eat," he continued, ignoring me. I choked back the hysteria that threatened to explode. But a small giggle managed to get out despite my efforts. He glowered at me. I waved and fled to the locker room. I dressed quickly, something stronger than butterflies battering recklessly against the walls of my stomach. My argument with Mike already a distant memory. I was wondering if Edward would be waiting, or if I should meet him at his car. What if his family was there? I felt a wave of real terror. Did they know that I knew? Was I supposed to know that they knew that I knew?
or not. By the time I walked out of the gym, I had just about decided to walk straight home without even looking toward the parking lot. But my worries were unnecessary. Edward was waiting, leaning casually against the side of the gym, his breathtaking face untroubled. As I walked to his side, I felt a peculiar sense of release. "Hi," I breathed, smiling hugely. "Hello." His answering smile was brilliant. "How was Jim?" My face fell a tiny bit. "Fine," I lied. "Really?" He was unconvinced. His eyes shifted their focus slightly, looking over my shoulder and narrowing. I glanced behind me to see Mike's back as he walked away. "What?" I demanded. His eyes slid back to mine, still tight. "Newton's getting on my nerves." "You weren't listening again?" I was horror-struck. All traces of my sudden good humor vanished. "How's your head?" he asked innocently. "You're unbelievable." I turned, stomping away in the general direction of the parking lot, though I hadn't ruled out just walking at this point. He kept up with me easily. "You were the one who mentioned how I'd never seen you in gym. It made me curious." He didn't sound repentant, so I ignored him. We walked in silence, a furious, embarrassed silence on my part, to his car. But I had to stop a few steps away. A crowd of people, all boys, were surrounding it. Then I realized they weren't surrounding the Volvo. They were actually circled around Rosalie's red convertible, unmistakable lust in their eyes. None of them even looked up as Edward slid between them to open his door. I climbed quickly in the passenger side, also unnoticed. "Ostentatious," he muttered. "What kind of car is that?" I asked. "An M3. "I don't speak car and driver." "It's a BMW. He rolled his eyes, not looking at me, trying to back out without running over the car enthusiasts. I nodded. I'd heard of that one. "Are you still angry?" he asked, as he carefully maneuvered his way out. "Definitely." He sighed. "Will you forgive me if I apologize?" "Maybe. If you mean it. And if you promise not to do it again," I insisted. His eyes were suddenly shrewd. "How about if I mean it, and I agree to let you drive Saturday?" He countered my conditions. I considered and decided it was probably the best offer I would get. "Deal," I agreed. "Then, I'm very sorry I upset you." His eyes burned with sincerity for a protracted moment, playing havoc with the rhythm of my heart, and then turned playful. "And I'll be on your doorstep, bright and early, Saturday morning. It doesn't help with the Charlie situation if an unexplained Volvo is left in the driveway." His smile was condescending now. I wasn't intending to bring a car. "How?" He cut me off. "Don't worry about it. I'll be there. No car." I let it go. I had a more pressing question. "Is it later yet?" I asked significantly. He frowned. "I suppose it is later." I kept my expression polite as I waited. He stopped the car. I looked up, surprised. Of course, we were already at Charlie's house, parked behind the truck. It was easier to ride with him if I only looked when it was over. When I looked back at him, he was staring at me, measuring with his eyes. "And you still want to know?" why you can't see me hunt. He seemed solemn, but I thought I saw a trace of humor deep in his eyes. Well, I clarified, I was mostly wondering about your reaction. Did I frighten you? Yes, there was definitely humor there. No, I lied. He didn't buy it. I apologize for scaring you. He persisted with a slight smile, but then all evidence of teasing disappeared. It was just the very thought of you being there while we hunted. His jaw tightened. That would be bad. He spoke from between clenched teeth. Extremely. Because he took a deep breath and stared through the windshield at the thick, rolling clouds that seemed to press down almost within reach. When we hunt, he spoke slowly, unwillingly, we give ourselves over to our senses, govern less with our minds, especially our sense of smell. If you were anywhere near me when I lost control that way. He shook his head, still gazing morosely at the heavy clouds. I kept my expression firmly under control, expecting the swift flash of his eyes to judge my reaction that soon followed. My face gave nothing away. But our eyes held, and the silence deepened and changed. Flickers of the electricity I'd felt this afternoon began to charge the atmosphere as he gazed unrelentingly into my eyes. It wasn't until my head started to swim that I realized I wasn't breathing. When I drew in a jagged breath, breaking the stillness, he closed his eyes. Bella, I think you should go inside now. His low voice was rough, his eyes on the clouds again. I opened the door, and the arctic draft that burst into the car helped clear my head. Afraid I might stumble in my woozy state, I stepped carefully out of the car and shut the door behind me, without looking back. The whir of the automatic window unrolling made me turn. Oh, Bella, he called after me, his voice more even. He leaned toward the open window with a faint smile on his lips. Yes? Tomorrow, it's my turn. Your turn to what? He smiled wider, flashing his gleaming teeth. Ask the questions. And then he was gone, the car speeding down the street and disappearing around the corner before I could even collect my thoughts. I smiled as I walked to the house. It was clear he was planning to see me tomorrow, if nothing else. That night, Edward starred in my dreams, as usual. However, the climate of my unconsciousness had changed. It thrilled with the same electricity that had charged the afternoon, and I tossed and turned restlessly, waking often. It was only in the early hours of the morning that I finally sank into an exhausted, dreamless sleep. When I woke, I was still tired, but edgy as well. I pulled on my brown turtleneck and the inescapable jeans, sighing as I daydreamed of spaghetti straps and shorts. Breakfast was the usual, quiet event I expected. Charlie fried eggs for himself. I had my bowl of cereal. I wondered if he had forgotten about this Saturday. He answered my unspoken question as he stood up to take his plate to the sink. "About this Saturday," he began, walking across the kitchen and turning on the faucet. I cringed. "Yeah, Dad." "Are you still set on going to Seattle?" he asked. "That was the plan," I grimaced, wishing he hadn't brought it up so I wouldn't have to compose careful half-truths. He squeezed some dish soap onto his plate and swirled it around with the brush. "And you're sure you can't make it back in time for the dance?" "I'm not going to the dance, Dad," I glared. "Didn't anyone ask you?" he asked, trying to hide his concern by focusing on rinsing the plate. I sidestepped the minefield. "It's a girl's choice." "Oh," he frowned as he dried his plate. I sympathized with him. It must be a hard thing to be a father, living in fear that your daughter would meet a boy she liked, but also having to worry if she didn't. How ghastly it would be, I thought, shuddering, if Charlie had even the slightest inkling of exactly what I did like. Charlie left then, with a goodbye wave, and I went upstairs to brush my teeth and gather my books. When I heard the cruiser pull away, I could only wait a few seconds before I had to peek out of my window. The silver car was already there, waiting in Charlie's spot on the driveway. I bounded down the stairs and out the front door, wondering how long this bizarre routine would continue. I never wanted it to end. He waited in the car, not appearing to watch as I shut the door behind me without bothering to lock the deadbolt. I walked to the car, pausing shyly before opening the door and stepping in. He was smiling, relaxed, and as usual, perfect and beautiful to an excruciating degree. "Good morning." His voice was silky. "How are you today?" His eyes roamed over my face as if his question was something more than simple courtesy. "Good, thank you." I was always good, much more than good, when I was near him. His gaze lingered on the circles under my eyes. "You look tired." "I couldn't sleep," I confessed, automatically swinging my hair around my shoulder to provide some measure of cover. "Neither could I," he teased as he started the engine. I was becoming used to the quiet purr. I was sure the roar of my truck would scare me whenever I got to drive it again. I laughed. "I guess that's right. I suppose I slept just a little bit more than you did." "I'd wager you did." "So what did you do last night?" I asked. He chuckled. "Not a chance. It's my day to ask questions." "Oh, that's right. What do you want to know?" My forehead creased. I couldn't imagine anything about me that could be in any way interesting to him. "What's your favorite color?" he asked, his face grave. I rolled my eyes. "It changes from day to day." "What's your favorite color today?" He was still solemn. "Probably brown." I tended to dress according to my mood. He snorted, dropping his serious expression. "Brown?" he asked skeptically. "Sure. Brown is warm. I miss brown. Everything that's supposed to be brown, tree trunks, rocks, dirt, it's all covered up with squashy green stuff here," I complained. He seemed fascinated by my little rant. He considered for a moment, staring into my eyes. "You're right," he decided, serious again. "Brown is warm." He reached over, swiftly but somehow still hesitantly, to sweep my hair back behind my shoulder. We were at the school by now. He turned back to me as he pulled into a parking space. What music is in your CD player right now? He asked, his face as somber as if he'd asked for a murder confession. I realized I'd never removed the CD Phil had given me. When I said the name of the band, he smiled crookedly, a peculiar expression on his eyes. He flipped open a compartment under his car's CD player, pulled out one of 30 or so CDs that were jammed into a small space, and handed it to me. Debussy to this, he raised an eyebrow. It was the same CD. I examined the familiar cover art, keeping my eyes down. It continued like that for the rest of the day. While he walked me to English, when he met me after Spanish, all through lunch hour, he questioned me relentlessly about every insignificant detail of my existence. Movies I'd liked and hated, the few places I'd been and the many places I wanted to go, and books, endlessly books. I couldn't remember the last time I'd talked so much. More often than not, I felt self-conscious, certain I must be boring him. But the absolute absorption of his face and his never-ending stream of questions compelled me to continue. Mostly his questions were easy, only a very few triggering my easy blushes. But when I did flush, it brought on a whole new round of questions, such as the time he asked my favorite gemstone, and I blurted out topaz before thinking. He'd been flinging questions at me with such speed that I felt like I was taking one of those psychiatric tests where you answer with the first word that comes to mind. I was sure he would have continued down whatever mental list he was following, except for the blush. My face reddened because, until very recently, my favorite gemstone was garnet. It was impossible, while staring back into his topaz eyes, not to remember the reason for the switch. And naturally, he wouldn't rest until I'd admitted why I was embarrassed. Tell me, he finally commanded after persuasion failed. Failed only because I kept my eyes safely away from his face. It's the color of your eyes today, I sighed, surrendering, staring down at my hands as I fiddled with a piece of my hair. I suppose if you asked me in 2 weeks, I'd say onyx. I'd given more information than necessary in my unwilling honesty, and I worried it would provoke the strange anger that flared whenever I slipped and revealed too clearly how obsessed I was. But his pause was very short. What kinds of flowers do you prefer? He fired off. I sighed in relief and continued with the psychoanalysis. Biology was a complication again. Edward had continued with his quizzing up until Mr. Banner entered the room, dragging the audiovisual frame again. As the teacher approached the light switch, I noticed Edward slide his chair slightly further away from mine. It didn't help. As soon as the room was dark, there was the same electric spark, the same restless craving to stretch my hand across the short space and touch his cold skin, as yesterday. I leaned forward on the table, resting my chin on my folded arms, my hidden fingers gripping the table's edge as I fought to ignore the irrational longing that unsettled me. I didn't look at him, afraid that if he was looking at me, it would only make self-control that much harder. I sincerely tried to watch the movie, but at the end of the hour, I had no idea what I'd just seen. I sighed in relief again when Mr. Banner turned the lights on, finally glancing at Edward. He was looking at me, his eyes ambivalent. He rose in silence and then stood still, waiting for me. We walked toward the gym in silence, like yesterday. And also like yesterday, he touched my face wordlessly, this time with the back of his cool hand, stroking once from my temple to my jaw, before he turned and walked away. Jim passed quickly as I watched Mike's one-man badminton show. He didn't speak to me today, either in response to my vacant expression or because he was still angry about our squabble yesterday. Somewhere, in a corner of my mind, I felt bad about that, but I couldn't concentrate on him. I hurried to change afterwards, ill at ease, knowing the faster I moved, the sooner I would be with Edward. The pressure made me more clumsy than usual, but eventually I made it out the door, feeling the same release when I saw him standing there, a wide smile automatically spreading across my face. He smiled in reaction, before launching into more cross-examination. His questions were different now, though, not as easily answered. He wanted to know what I missed about home, insisting on descriptions of anything he wasn't familiar with. We sat in front of Charlie's house for hours as the sky darkened and rain plummeted around us in a sudden deluge. I tried to describe impossible things. The scent of creosote, bitter, slightly resinous, but still pleasant. The high, keening sound of the cicadas in July. The feathery barrenness of the trees, the very sighs of the sky extending white blue from horizon to horizon, barely interrupted by the low mountains covered with purple volcanic rock. The hardest thing to explain was why it was so beautiful to me. To justify a beauty that didn't depend on the sparse, spiny vegetation that often looked half dead. A beauty that had more to do with the exposed shape of the land, with the shallow bowls of valleys between craggy hills, the way they held on to the sun. I found myself using my hands as I tried to describe it to him. His quiet, probing questions kept me talking freely, forgetting in the dim light of the storm to be embarrassed for monopolizing the conversation. Finally, when I had finished detailing my cluttered room at home, he paused instead of responding with another question. "Are you finished?" I asked in relief. "Not even close, but your father will be home soon." "Charlie," I suddenly recalled his existence and sighed. I looked out at the rain-darkened sky, but it gave nothing away. "How late is it?" I wondered out loud as I glanced at the clock. I was surprised by the time. Charlie would be driving home now. "It's twilight," Edward murmured, looking at the western horizon, obscured as it was with clouds. His voice was thoughtful, as if his mind were somewhere far away. I stared at him as he gazed unseeingly out the windshield. I was still staring when his eyes suddenly shifted back to mine. "It's the safest time of day for us," he said, answering the unspoken question in my eyes. "The easiest time, but also the saddest, in a way. The end of another day. The return of the night. Darkness is so predictable, don't you think?" He smiled wistfully. "I like the night," Without the dark, we'd never see the stars. I frowned. Not that you see them here much. He laughed, and the mood abruptly lightened. Charlie will be here in a few minutes, so unless you want to tell him that you'll be with me Saturday. He raised one eyebrow. Thanks, but no thanks. I gathered my books, realizing I was stiff from sitting still so long. So, is it my turn tomorrow then? Certainly not. His face was teasingly outraged. I told you I wasn't done, didn't I? What more is there? You'll find out tomorrow. He reached across to open my door for me. His sudden proximity sent my heart into frenzied palpitations. But his hand froze on the handle. Not good, he muttered. What is it? I was surprised to see his jaw was clenched, his eyes disturbed. He glanced at me for a brief second. Another complication, he said glumly. He flung the door open in one swift movement, and then moved, almost cringed, swiftly away from me. The flash of headlights through the rain caught my attention as a dark car pulled up to the curb, a few feet away, facing us. Charlie's around the corner, he warned, staring through the downpour at the other vehicle. I hopped out at once, despite my confusion and curiosity. The rain was louder as it glanced off my jacket. I tried to make out the shapes in the front seat of the other car, but it was too dark. I could see Edward illuminated in the glare of the new car's headlights. He was still staring ahead, his gaze locked on to something or someone I couldn't see. His expression was a strange mix of frustration and defiance. He revved the engine. The tires squealed against the wet pavement. The Volvo was out of sight in seconds. Hey, Bella, called a familiar husky voice from the driver's side of the little black car. Jacob? I asked, squinting through the rain. Just then, Charlie's cruiser swung around the corner, his lights shining on the occupants of the car in front of me. Jacob was already climbing out, his wide grin visible even through the darkness. In the passenger seat was a much older man, a heavy-set man with a memorable face, a face that overflowed the cheeks resting against his shoulders, with creases running through the russet skin like an old leather jacket. The surprisingly familiar eyes, black eyes, that seemed at the same time both too young and too ancient for the broad face they were set in. Jacob's father, Billy Black. I knew him immediately, though in more than 5 years since I'd seen him last, I'd managed to forget his name when Charlie had spoken of him my first day here. He was staring at me, scrutinizing my face. So I smiled tentatively at him. His eyes were wide, as if in shock or fear. His nostrils flared, my smile faded. Another complication, Edward had said. Billy still stared at me, with intense, anxious eyes. I groaned internally. Had Billy recognized Edward so easily? Could he really believe the impossible legends his son had scoffed at? The answer was clear in Billy's eyes. Yes. Yes, he could. Billy, Charlie called as soon as he got out of the car. I turned toward the house, beckoning to Jacob as I ducked under the porch. I heard Charlie greeting them loudly behind me. I'm going to pretend I didn't see you behind the wheel, Jake, he said disapprovingly. We get permits early on the res, Jacob said while I unlocked the door and flicked on the porch light. Sure you do, Charlie laughed. I have to get around somehow. I recognized Billy's resonant voice easily, despite the years. The sound of it made me feel suddenly younger, a child. I went inside, leaving the door open behind me, turning on lights before I hung up my jacket. Then I stood in the door, watching anxiously as Charlie and Jacob helped Billy out of the car and into his wheelchair. I backed out of the way as the three of them hurried in, shaking off the rain. This is a surprise, Charlie was saying. It's been too long, Billy answered. I hope it's not a bad time. His dark eyes flashed up to me again, their expression unreadable. No, it's great. I hope you can stay for the game. Jacob grinned. I think that's the plan. Our TV broke last week. Billy made a face at his son. And of course, Jacob was anxious to see Bella again, he added. Jacob scowled and ducked his head, while I fought back a surge of remorse. Maybe I'd been too convincing at the beach. Are you hungry? I asked, turning toward the kitchen. I was eager to escape Billy's searching gaze. Nah, we ate just before we came, Jacob answered. How about you, Charlie? I called over my shoulder as I fled around the corner. Sure, he replied, his voice moving in the direction of the front room and the TV. I could hear Billy's chair follow. The grilled cheese sandwiches were in the frying pan, and I was slicing up a tomato when I sensed someone behind me. So, how are things? Jacob asked. Pretty good, I smiled. His enthusiasm was hard to resist. How about you? Did you finish your car? No, he frowned. I still need parts. We borrowed that one. He pointed with his thumb in the direction of the front yard. Sorry, I haven't seen any, what was it you were looking for? Master cylinder, he grinned. Is something wrong with the truck? He added suddenly. No. Oh, I just wondered because you weren't driving it. I stared down at the pan, pulling up the edge of a sandwich to check the bottom side. I got a ride with a friend. Nice ride. Jacob's voice was admiring. I didn't recognize the driver, though. Thought I knew most of the kids around here. I nodded noncommittally, keeping my eyes down as I flipped sandwiches. My dad seemed to know him from somewhere. Jacob, could you hand me some plates? They're in the cupboard over the sink. Sure. He got the plates in silence. I hoped he would let it drop now. So who was it? He asked, setting two plates on the counter next to me. I sighed in defeat. Edward Cullen? To my surprise, he laughed. I glanced up at him. He looked a little embarrassed. Guess that explains it then, he said. I wondered why my dad was acting so strange. That's right. I faked an innocent expression. He doesn't like the Cullens. Superstitious old man, Jacob muttered under his breath. You don't think you'd say anything to Charlie? I couldn't help asking, the words coming out in a low rush. Jacob stared at me for a moment, and I couldn't read the expression in his dark eyes. I doubt it, he finally answered. I think Charlie chewed him out pretty good last time. They haven't spoken much since. Tonight's sort of a reunion, I think. I don't think he'd bring it up again. Oh, I said, trying to sound indifferent. I stayed in the front room after I carried the food out to Charlie. pretending to watch the game while Jacob chatted at me. I was really listening to the men's conversation, watching for any sign that Billy was about to rat me out, trying to think of ways to stop him if he began. It was a long night. I had a lot of homework that was going undone, but I was afraid to leave Billy alone with Charlie. Finally, the game ended.
"Are you and your friends coming back to the beach soon?"
Jacob asked as he pushed his father over the lip of the threshold.
"I'm not sure," I hedged.
"That was fun, Charlie," Billy said. "Come up for the next game," Charlie encouraged.
"Sure, sure," Billy said. "We'll be here. Have a good night."
His eyes shifted to mine, and his smile disappeared.
"You take care, Bella,"
he added seriously.
"Thanks," I muttered, looking away.
I headed for the stairs, while Charlie waved from the doorway.
"Wait, Bella," he said.
I cringed. Had Billy gotten something in before I joined them in the living room? But Charlie was relaxed, still grinning from the unexpected visit.
"I didn't get a chance to talk to you tonight. How was your day?"
"Good," I hesitated with one foot on the first stair, searching for details I could safely share. "My badminton team won all 4 games."
"Wow, I didn't know you could play badminton."
"Well, actually I can't, but my partner's really good," I admitted.
"Who is it?"
he asked with token interest.
Mike Newton," I told him reluctantly.
"Oh yeah, you said you were friends with the Newton kid." He perked up.
"Nice family,"
he mused for a minute.
"Why didn't you ask him to the dance this weekend?"
"Dad," I groaned.
"He's kind of dating my friend Jessica. Besides, you know I can't dance."
"Oh yeah," he muttered. Then he smiled at me apologetically.
"So I guess it's good you'll be gone Saturday. I've made plans to go fishing with the guys from the station. Weather's supposed to be real warm, but if you wanted to put your trip off till someone could go with you, I'd stay home. I know I leave you here alone too much."
"Dad, you're doing a great job," I smiled, hoping my relief didn't show. "I've never minded being alone. I'm too much like you." I winked at him, and he smiled, his crinkly-eyed smile. I slept better that night, too tired to dream again. And that is where we close the book tonight, on this episode of Down to Sleep. I will see you next time.